Yes, good morning, this is CO3 Styles.
Yes.
I have Nia Vo in the seat right now for parole.
Okay, that's Mr. Vo in the seat now, sir?
Yes, it is.
Okay, well, we'll be ready for him, and then you have, what, one other one for us, sir? Oh, you have two more, three more.
I thought there was a week 5 today.
Yes, sir, that's what I'm
on.
Yeah, I saw that you have 5 all total today, that's what we show,
That's correct, this is the only parole as far now.
Yes, sir. Well, we'll be ready for the parole with Mr. Vo, and as soon as you put him in the phone, we'll be ready to get started, sir.
All right, I'll give him the phone right now, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir, just hold on one moment, let me just indicate to you that this morning, I requested the Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse if she would conduct a hearing for you, now he says she will lead the hearing for you, so if you just hold on, the next voice that you will hear will be the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse, so just hold on, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Vo.
Good morning.
Could you please state your full name and your ADC number for the record?
My name is Daniel Vo. Number is 098681.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a 412B hearing, which would be parole to a consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. And you became, or you will become, it looks like, become eligible for those very shortly on June 18th, just a few days from now. The board members who are conducting the hearing today, this is your first hearing, right, before the board?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So let me introduce you to the board members. If you look all the way to your right, to my left, down that way, on the very end is the Honorable Louis Quinones. Right next to him is the Honorable David Newell. Right next to me here in the middle of the bench is our board chairman, the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright. And to my right over here is the Honorable Michael Johnson. My name's Gail Rittenhouse. As Dr. Wright said, I'll lead the hearing today. So we'll start with just a brief summary, Mr. Vo. You're 48 years old, right?
Yes, ma'am.
You're 48?
48.
Okay. And you're serving, you're sentencing, I think I have it right, you're serving 25 years to life for the crime of murder first degree, and then you've got a consecutive murder first degree sentence, and then consecutive to that, it looks like you have a 15-year sentence for theft. Is that correct as far as you know?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And those occurred on May 14th of 1991, and you were about 23 when that happened? 23, 22?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And you were convicted by jury trial on January 6th, 1993, and sentenced on June 18th, 1993. And it looks like you appealed, but that was affirmed, your conviction was affirmed in November of 1994. Looks like since you've been in prison, you've done quite a bit of programming, actually. You've done cultural diversity, smart recovery, I think that is. Is that smart recovery? Is that what you...
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I know that program. A couple of other substance abuse classes, conflict resolution, parenting, creative writing. Did you finish your GED or just take part of the GED?
Yes, ma'am, I got my GED.
You finished it. Okay, well, good. Well, congratulations on that. And also, it looks like you've taken some construction technology classes. Which construction in particular? Was it just kind of a general class?
Carpentry and plumbing and heating.
Okay, carpentry, plumbing, heating. Okay, those are all good things to know. All right. Are you able to use any of those with doing maintenance around the prison, or have you been able to?
No, ma'am.
Use those skills yet? Well, you might be able to be a maintenance guy at some point. Okay, and it looks like you also on the opposite side. It looks like you've only had 2 majors, so you've been pretty good at following the rules in prison. Your last discipline, it looks like, was February of 2015, and that was a minor for smoking in an unauthorized area. Okay. And then the last one before that was 2005, so 10 years before. And that one was for disrespect, it looks like. So that's a pretty good discipline record considering the amount of time that you've been there. So that's a good thing. Let's see. The offense itself, were you on probation at the time of the offense, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so you were on probation. And the offense, we do have a letter from the county attorney's office, and we also have a representative here, from the author of the letter is here today. And we also have a victim representative here today, sir. But the county attorney's letter does a nice summary of the crime, but I'm going to ask you to tell us kind of what happened, too, from your perspective. But it appears that you were in a car traveling on the freeway on I-17, and the crime itself involves you taking a handgun and firing it at another car, and you hit a woman who was pregnant, and you killed her and her unborn fetus. So can you tell us what happened? What was going on in your life at that time? Why would you do such a thing?
I was just being dumb and foolish, man.
Were you using drugs? Were you?
I was a little bit.
Were you high at the time of the incident offense, or?
No, man. I can't use that as an excuse for my life, you know. I did something real, real terrible, and that's my only excuse.
Okay.
It's stupid.
So what, I mean, one of the things that, the reason that we're all here is that we just want to get to know you a little bit and to know a little bit about, like, what was going on in your life at the time. I mean, were you working? What was going on with you at the time? Were you in a relationship with, you know, did you have family? What was going on?
I had my foster family. I've been with me since I've been over in the United States.
Okay. So you lived with the foster family at the time? Or you were 20, you were in your 20s, so you had...
Yeah. I was living on just with friends.
Okay. And were you working? What kind of work were you doing?
I was a lifeguard one time in my life, and I just do a little job here and there, like cooks and being a busboy and stuff like that.
Okay, so some restaurant work then? You were working in restaurants a little bit. Okay. And how did you come to be there that night in the car? What brought you to that point? How did you get there? Were those friends in the car with you, or?
Yes. There was another driver, but...
And where were you? You were in the back seat of the car?
I was in the passenger.
You were on the passenger side, okay. And why, what made you fire the gun? What?
Well, it was meant to scare them, and it just, I can't explain it. It just, the thing that happened, it just...
Did somebody dare you?
I'm so responsible for it, but it just, things happen and I don't know how to explain it.
Okay, sir. All right. Let's see if fellow board members have any questions for you. Mr. Quinones has a question for you.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Mr. Vogel?
Yes, sir.
I'm trying to understand who you were at that time in your life that would lead up to stealing a vehicle and shooting at an individual, shooting at an innocent person on the freeway. I think you just said, and I'm not words for this, but I think this is way beyond just scaring somebody. You discharge a firearm from a moving vehicle in a vehicle. What was going on in your life at that time that would lead up to such a violent act?
It was stupidity and wanted to impress people, the wrong people. And
were you part of a street gang, or?
Yes, sir.
And what gang were you part of?
It was a Mexican gang called Lake Chicanos.
And what was the attitude of the gang that would lead you to believe that shooting an innocent person in a moving vehicle would impress them? Help me understand this.
That's the thing. It was never meant for her to hurt anybody, and especially Miss Jennifer. The whole time that all this went down was she's trying to stop her husband from doing what he was doing to. But still, it was I'm in the wrong. I committed that thing and took her life. That's what I'm
cool.
for the last 25 years I've been facing. And you know,
what did you think her husband was doing?
It was I showed him the gun and he still flipped me off and doing all kinds of stuff, you know. I mean, but that's childish stuff that shouldn't even happen. I shouldn't even pull out a gun for stuff like that. But I can't use that as an excuse, you know. And we're in the middle lane and the car was started drifting to the side. And when the driver realized it, he pulled up back to lane. That's when my hand went up and the shot went to where it wasn't supposed to go.
Okay, Mr. Bill, thank you.
Mr. Johnson has a question.
So Mr. Bill, did you go by the nickname Maniac?
Yes, sir.
So how did you come about that name, sir?
I was just wasn't afraid of a whole crowd of another gang before I came around.
And so you fired, how many times did you fire at the vehicle? Twice?
Yes, sir.
So if you didn't intend to shoot anyone in the vehicle, how did you wind up shooting into the actual vehicle to strike the victim?
Well, the second shot is the one that wasn't, my hand was hit by the driver's, with his hand on the steering wheel when he tried to pull back to the lane, and my arm hit the arm up. And that was the shot that wasn't even about to be going over.
All right, so did you go bragging about it after you did it, sir?
No, sir.
So were you shooting at the victim or shooting at the driver at the time it happened?
I was shooting at the fender.
You were shooting at the fender? So any statement that they made to say that you were shooting at the driver, you trying to say that that's not true?
Well, the driver is on the other side. On the far north part, the call for lane, we were in the middle lane. So, it's impossible to shoot at the driver.
So, what was your reason for the conflict, the wanting to shoot at this vehicle?
There was none.
There was none? So was that the intent when you guys, you stole the vehicle prior to that?
No, so we were just going back home when all this took place.
And you said you were a member of Wedgwood, Tucano's?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you were a little bit away where this happened. That was a little bit of a distance from where you guys actually live. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
So what were you guys doing up there?
We're going to the mall.
Which mall?
From Metro Center.
Okay. All right. So, Mr. Bell, do they still call you maniac in prison, or you associated?
No, sir.
Are you associated with a gang while you're in prison? STG.
No, sir.
No.
No, sir. No.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Neal has a question for you.
Thank you, ma'am. I'm still confused about what initiated all this stuff. So you're driving down the freeway going to the mall or going home from the mall, and you've got a gun in your hand while you're driving down the road?
I was in the passenger seat.
Okay, but you got a gun in your hand while you're in the passenger seat and your friend's driving down the road?
Yes, sir.
Okay, why would you be driving down the road like that with a gun in your hand, unless you had an intent to do something pretty vile and vicious?
Yeah.
Okay, because I've heard a lot of stories, and I've seen some reports where people in gangs, as part of their initiation, go down the street, especially at night when the light's off, and when somebody flashes their lights at them, or they have their high beams on, they flash their lights on them, and as they go by, they shoot at them. And that's part of the initiation for a gang. So they go out there with an intent to shoot at somebody, maybe not to kill anybody, but to shoot at people, and they've succeeded in killing more than one person that way. So tell me, because you've not explained this to where I can understand either, you're going down the freeway, what did this truck swerved into the lane and almost hit you? Is that what started this, or?
Well, the driver told me that this dude over here is mad at him because he thought he was trying to get in his lane or something, and when he looks over here, he started flipping him off and doing all kinds of stuff.
Okay, so every time you flipped him off, a bullet went through the windshield or something came flying out of that truck that was going to cause harm to you and your friend in your car?
No, sir, that's what...
So you took it upon yourself to, in a moving vehicle, that you're in as a passenger, you got a gun in your hand, and because somebody used an obscene gesture, you took it upon yourself to shoot at that truck. And then once you kill the woman, it's like, oh, poor, pitiful me, I'm sorry, I was just stupid?
No, I can't.
I mean, the way my mind puts this together, you and your friend stole a car, you had an intent to go out and either rob somebody or hurt somebody, otherwise you wouldn't have a gun in your hand. And for some reason, whatever it happens to be, that truck got chosen and there was a little bit of road rage, and so you decided to, and this is the other thing I can't understand, you're on the passenger side, you're shooting through the car to shoot at the truck, and you're going at high speed down the freeway, and it makes absolutely no sense to me at all, no matter how you do it, but the fact that you had a gun in your hand before this ever started is what really brings me to believe that that was your intent the whole time.
Well, I was never intent to hurt that lady.
Well, what was your intent? Why were you carrying a gun in your hand when you're passing me over the car and you're just going, you left the mall and going home, or you're on the way to the mall from home? Why did you have a gun in your hand? I mean, if you're a criminal and you're carrying one for nefarious reasons, most of them usually carry a waistband or something like that, but you got it in your hand like you're expecting from it.
Well,
Well,
it's still not a place that, you know, that normal people would carry things unless they have some sort of intent to use it. Okay, thank you, sir.
Mr. Quinones has another question.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Mr. Vaughn?
Yes, sir.
I have a follow-up question, and I'm hoping you'll be honest with me to at least help me understand gang culture. When you went to prison for this crime, were you treated with respect inside the prison system or as an outcast for doing this?
Who's an outcast?
Why?
Because
this hearing certainly isn't supposed to be an indictment of the entire street gang culture to you. We're here for your case. But what have you done since you've been inside the prison system to help change this attitude? Not just in yourself, but in those around you. What have you done?
I've stayed out of trouble. I've stayed away from drugs. I tried up through like the last year and a half, 2 years. I quit smoking and I've been working just to, you know, and my faith. I got this faith that I've had since I was a kid, but I've walked away from and being rebellious, and now that I come back, that's how I can find my peace.
I guess I only ask that because sometimes people enter the prison system and they try very hard to be an example of what not to be, because I'll tell you, Mr. Vaughn, and that's why I was very careful to say that this hearing is not some sort of indictment against the entire gang culture, but this sort of behavior continues to exist. People continue to kill people to impress their homeboys, and I find that very disturbing.
Yes.
So thank you for your honesty. Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Mr. Quinones. Any other questions from board, Dr. Wright?
I just want to ask a question. I just want to get familiar with you, Mr. Boyle, since we've never met you before. How old were you when you came to the United States?
11 years old.
And how did you adjust when you were, because you were, I mean, I was young, but did you were at least old enough, adolescents, to know what was going on around you. So how did you adjust when you came to the United States? You just decided to become a gang member or something, and that was a group that you decided to associate with, sir?
Well, sir, I've been raised from a very young age. When I was at home, I lived on the street when I was home. Not because I had a lot of family, it's just...
So when you came, you had a foster family, so to speak, who you was living with, and did you change foster families? Did you change families before you went out on your own, sir, or did you just have one family that you resided with, sir?
I went to seven of them, and the first family that I have, they didn't want to give me up, and they stayed with me, and
they
were my first and my last family.
Okay. Now, I do take note, I don't know, you know, what the State Department would do, but that you are ICE, you have an ICE retainer. If you were given a choice, sir, at some point, because as you told us that you know that this is not, that you're not going to be released today, at some point, would you prefer remaining in the United States or going back to Vietnam, sir?
I prefer to be here. But I know that they have to deport me back home.
report you back or not. That was just a general question. And now it's too early to even talk about it, but that was just a general question. Now, sir, you are here, as you know, and as you've stated, and as the Honorable Ms. Greenhouse has stated, you're here today to see if you would be paroled to your next sentence. Why do you think this board even ought to consider paroling you to another sentence, sir, in view of the crime that you committed? In your own words, not what someone might have said to you or whatever, but in your own words, why should this board even consider moving you to your next consecutive sentence, sir?
Because I'm growing, and that's why I have an opportunity to show that I'm not that little dumb kid no more.
Well, you don't, when you're a young dumb kid, sir, you was just acting out, sitting up in a car, stolen car, a vehicle that, with a gun in your lap, as you say. You don't sound too dumb to me. It sounds like to me you had something in your mind that you were going to do. I mean, if I go out and steal a car, have a gun, where did you get the gun from, sir?
Enemies
that when I was out there,
and that's basically the only thing that the guns for. So it's
an
only one shotgun.
Well, who gave it to you? Who did you buy it from? How did you end up in your hands, sir? The gun. How did you end up with it?
I traded a friend of mine for it.
Oh, okay. Just a couple other quick questions, sir. Are you still a member of that gang, the Mexican gang that you were associated with at the time that you committed this offense? Sir?
I don't have nothing to do with them no more since I've been locked up.
Have they attempted to attack you since you've been locked up, sir?
The what, sir?
If they attacked me, you know, gang members, they will attack, you know, those who don't support them. That's what I've been told, you know, when you're incarcerated. And I say, have any of them attempted to fight you, to come after you since you've been incarcerated, sir?
I withdraw that since the county jail, sir.
Okay. So you're not a member of the gang anymore. You've given up on that. How do you feel, sir, now? I mean, when you started, Mr. Corinnes, I think it was at least one of my distinguished colleagues, you indicated that when you first went in, it was kind of worked out upon because of the person that you ended up murdering and the child. How do you feel now, sir, about having committed that crime against such an innocent person?
Mr. Johnson has another question for you.
So I just wanted just to follow up real quick from, I just want to make sure I heard the statement right from Mr. Quinones. Did you say that you felt like you kind of been unjustly treated or unfairly treated because it was a white female and her baby?
In years, her baby is the baby. I couldn't explain to him that, hey, I didn't know nothing like this, you know, I mean, it wasn't, but still, it happened, and I can't rectify myself, but, you know, whether I knew it or not, it's still happen.
Okay. All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. So, Mr. Vo, you came to this country, you were 11, you said?
I left home when I was 8, ma'am.
You left your home, and that's in Vietnam, you left your home?
Yeah.
So you were homeless in Vietnam, you were just living on the streets in Vietnam?
I was a runaway.
You were a runaway?
When I was 5 years old.
Okay. And then, so you were adopted, you were brought here when you were 11?
Yes, ma'am.
And did anyone else come with you? Did you have brothers or sisters come with you, or anybody, any friends?
I just came by myself.
It was just you. And so a family here adopted you then, or fostered?
Through Catholic Social Service.
Okay. And you said I was a little confused. You said your foster family was your first family, and they wanted to keep you, but you went through some others. And then your last foster family was that same person?
Yes, ma'am. When they first picked me up, they wanted me to be their son.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I didn't know. Normally, I didn't know how things were. I was real screwed up when I first came over.
Well, you were a kid.
And my mom would tell you. I made a ruckus so much that my caseworker put me in different foster homes.
Uh-huh.
And within a week, they all kicked me out and said, we can't handle him. You know what I mean? But my mom was always there saying, we'll take him.
Okay, so then you went back with that first family then? Your real family? What would you consider your real family? And then you left there when you were 18, or what? I know people age out, kind of.
16, 17.
Okay, and where'd you go then?
I went to St. Louis, New York.
Okay. And you lived there?
I was there for a suicide in drug abuse.
Okay. And what kind of drugs were you using, sir?
I was real bad at meth and stuff like that.
Okay, meth. All right. Okay. So Mr. Vo, how are you different? I mean, you described what's really not very stable upbringing. I mean, between a different culture. I mean, you had to learn a whole different culture. You had went through the families. You had one family that obviously your mom wanted you, and she stuck with you. So how are you different now? What's different? I mean, you're bigger, you're older, you've learned some things, but what's different about you?
I walk my faith.
Okay, so you've found your faith again. Like when somebody makes you mad.
Just like my mom.
What's that?
Just like my mom. My faith is just like my mom. It was always there.
Mm-hmm.
It
was always there, but you just had to find it again.
I just had to submit.
Yeah. Okay. Are you still in touch with your mom at all, or no?
Yes, ma'am. I talked to you the other day.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, that's a good thing. It's always good to have somebody somebody on the outside that you can talk to. Anybody else that you have on the outside here?
I got my brothers and sisters.
Oh, okay. Okay. And you're still in touch with them, too?
Yes, ma'am.
Good. Okay. All right, sir. Well, we have some other people here today in the hearing that would like to speak as well. So we're gonna hear from them, And I don't know who would like to, how would you like to? And you'll be able to hear them, Mr. Will. Yeah, just come right up and thank you. And welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, if you could just please state your names of your, whoever's going to speak, that'd be great. And thank you.
My name is Chantel Montgomery.
Thank you.
I'm Rick Montgomery.
Thank you. And welcome. What would you like to tell the board?
Jennifer Montgomery was a vibrant 19-year-old woman. She was a new wife and soon-to-be mother of a baby girl that would have been named Jacqueline. Jennifer left behind her husband, Rick, her parents, Jim and Linda, and her grandparents, Joe and Nina. Earlier in the day on May 14th, 1991, Jennifer had spent time shopping for baby clothes. She bought a white dress with little hearts. She planned to take her baby home from the hospital that day, or the hospital in that dress, but instead her baby was buried. Was buried in it. Later that day, Jennifer was riding with her husband, Rick, when Nia Bo shot her. While he was riding in a stolen car, he had a complete disregard for Jennifer's life and her unborn daughter. Jennifer was 6 months pregnant when he shot her. Nia Bo's actions have forever changed my life and her family's life. During the trial, he could be seen blowing kisses to Jennifer's grandmother, Nina, and held up his hand like it was a gun and pointed it at Rick Montgomery, Jennifer's husband, like he was shooting at him. Nevo never showed remorse. There isn't any reason to believe that he has changed. There are safety concerns for society, for Rick, if he was paroled early to next sentence, and he's still relatively young. There's an ice hold, but there's no treaty with Vietnam, it will not be for him. We're asking you to please deny his parole and consider a 1-year set-off. And we have absolutely no problem being here every year for those. As long as we are alive, we will be here for each and every one of them.
Okay, thank you.
Any
questions from board members? Thank you so much for coming today. Good morning.
Welcome. Good morning.
Please state your name.
Thank you. Good morning, members of the board. My name is Mitch Eisenberg. I'm a deputy county attorney with Maricopa County Attorney's Office, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you for a few minutes here this morning. I noted from some of the questions that the board has asked, you're trying to understand why an individual would do the things that they did. Sometimes there is no explanation. Sometimes it is just, that is what they are. And we don't understand it, but because we're not that way. But in this case, this inmate is who he is. He's never taken responsibility. He doesn't now take responsibility. He told the board today that he never meant to hurt anybody, so he didn't take responsibility. He told the board that the driver hit his arm and the gun went off, somehow suggesting that it was the driver's fault. And then he told the board that he had a one-shot gun, and that was the gun that he had in his lap as he drove or was driven down the freeway, which in and of itself is interesting because there were two shots fired in this case. In this case, the cruelty and senselessness of the actions of this inmate cannot be understated. Remember, in May of 1991, he was on probation. And he couldn't abide by the terms and conditions of his probation. He was on probation for having stolen a different car. So in May of 1991, he goes out and he steals a car. And he drives that car. And he and his friend go to somebody else's house. And after a period of time at that person's house, they leave the house. And now the inmate is in the passenger seat. And they go onto the freeway at rush hour. And they're driving down the freeway at rush hour. And there are somewhere ADOT suggested at the time, back in 1991, at the time that the inmate was on the freeway, there were approximately, within that hour of time, 7,500 cars on the freeway. And this inmate chose to be in that car with a gun and drive upon Mr. Montgomery's truck. And understand, Mr. Montgomery was going to work. He had his wife in his truck with him. She was going to drop him off and go home. They were just driving down the freeway. And this inmate and his driver pulled up next to the Montgomery truck. And when they did, the inmate fired and didn't hit anyone. In fact, the testimony at the time of the trial was they believed, Mr. and Mrs. Montgomery believed it was a backfire from another car. And if this inmate is to be believed today, that means because he had a one-shot gun, he actually took the thought and the time then to reload another bullet into that gun. And what happened next was indicated by testimony at trial. The Fiero that the inmate was in got within less than 6 feet distance with Mr. Montgomery's truck. And the inmate was in the passenger seat. He leaned all the way across the driver, pointed his gun out the window, and fired directly into the cabin of the Montgomery truck. He wasn't trying to scare anybody. He wasn't trying not to hit anybody. Those are excuses that he made then. They're excuses that he makes now. So he fires, Jennifer Montgomery struck in the head. She falls into her husband's lap. He then, because he is in the far left lane, cuts across all lanes of traffic. Fortunately, he's able to get off the freeway where he calls 911. Unfortunately, his wife didn't make it. And they did hear a heartbeat from the baby. And they attempted to save the baby, and they weren't able to save the baby. The laws were different at the time, so this inmate was never charged with a crime for the baby. Did he take responsibility then? No. Because what happens next is the police find that car, the car that he stole and that he was in, and they find a fingerprint, and the fingerprint belongs to the inmate. So they broadcast it on the news. We are looking for this person. This person, the inmate. And what does he do? He and two of his friends get in a car and they beat feet for California. And when they get across the border, there's an attempt to locate on the car that he's in. And police find the car. And that car stopped in Blythe. They stopped at a convenience store, a gas station, something like that. And the police converge on the car. And they find two people, but they don't find the inmate. Because the inmate is hiding in a hiding space in a truck. And that's where he's found by the police. So he's never taken responsibility. He comes back, and what does he do? Now he's a big man. He's on the news. He's granting interviews on the news. That's a responsibility he's taken. There's no reason, based upon what he did and what he's done, to grant him any relief and any release from the life sentence that he was ordered to serve. He was on probation and given an opportunity before he even committed this senseless act. He's been selfish in prison. He's had disciplinary actions in prison. He can't follow the rules. He doesn't follow the rules. He does what he wants. He can't successfully comply with terms and conditions of probation and live a law-abiding life. He doesn't have it in him. That is not who he is. And that's why we don't understand, and that's why we ask questions that he can't answer. Members of the board, this inmate should never be released from his life sentence. That was the sentence he received for his crime, and that's the sentence that he should serve. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Any questions, Mr.?
Just a quick follow-up question, because I found this particularly disturbing, and that is the victim's representative saying that he was making threatening gestures in the courtroom.
That was when I spoke with the Montgomerys this morning, because I wasn't the original prosecutor on the case. I can't tell you that, but what they told me this morning before we came in was that they were concerned because during the trial, the inmate was blowing kisses to the victim's mother or grandmother and making threatening gestures again towards Mr. Montgomery. And one of the things that he indicated that Mr. Montgomery has always denied is that for somehow Mr. Montgomery made some obscene gesture at their car. Mr. Montgomery has always denied that. And in fact, indicated both at trial and in speaking at other times that it was the inmate and his driver who were making the obscene gesture.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming today. Okay, back to you, Mr. Vo. We're coming toward the end of your hearing, but I want to give you the opportunity to make a final statement if you'd like to. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell the board?
I can't say that I understand how they feel. Me being in prison for the rest of my life until I die, to eat Miss Montgomery's family and her husband, and I apologize. You won't get them from the gallery. But we all change, and you know, it's not, I never understand a day went by that I don't think why did all this happen. But it's very close to the family. I won't fight them or you know, try to argue with them. I messed up, I know. And I told you guys something here, understand that it's a fault that I did. That shouldn't happen. And I'll take it somehow, some way, find it, forgive me for it, you know. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Vo, thank you very much for your statement. Mr. Vo, the board is going to go into discussion. And we do all of our discussion under the open meeting law. We do our discussion in public. So we haven't talked about your case before right now. So all we ask is that you remain on the phone and listen to the discussion, and then we'll be back with you. Just remain silent, and we'll be back with you in just a moment. Okay, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, thank you. The board is now in discussion. This is truly a tragic case on so many levels, that Mr. Bell would be in this country and find it, get involved in street gang criminal activity, clearly a lot of criminal activity, committed the offense while on probation for unlawful use of a motor vehicle, and then steal another car, and it's clear that he just was not, he was on a criminal path back in those days, regardless, you know, as he said, people change, and they do. But back then, when the crime was committed, he certainly was not on a healthy path for anyone. He seems to have difficulty expressing himself, which is understandable, being emotional and not English, not his native language. But just given everything in this case, the totality of the case, considering the terrible crime and the feelings of the victims, I cannot recommend him for parole to a consecutive sentence, but I would listen to any input from fellow board members. Mr. Johnson?
I agree. I think that he did a very violent past. He had an opportunity to come over, to get adopted, to get a new family, to live a new life from being homeless, and he chose to live this destructive life, and this is, was a senseless homicide that he actually committed. I'm not in favor of parole to his next consecutive sentence.
Thank you. Mr. Quinones?
Thank you. I don't think I have anything much different to say. I'm certainly not in favor of parole or home arrest. I will say that I hope that he reflects on what he said about what he's doing to the victims. I absolutely will always respect the due process of an individual appearing before this board and vote as fairly and reasonably as possible, but I really hope he reflects on that. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Neal?
Yes, this, like you said, this is tragic on all levels. I don't think there's anyone in this room that can truly, I don't want to say appreciate, but understand what Mr. Moore went through in his childhood in 14 United States. It was just unfathomable that a five-year-old can be running the streets. However, my grandmother at six was close to that and had to take care of her three-year-old brother. It really works there since. But when Mr. Moore came to the United States, he had 12 years that he should have been able to learn the difference between right and wrong and how bad this sort of situation is. But I agree, he hasn't, for whatever reason, he hasn't really come to grips with what the totality of what he did or why he did it. I definitely, I have sympathy for Mr. Rose upbringing until he came to live in the Quant, and from there he made some very bad choices, and he still hasn't really accepted any of that. So I'm not in favor of a full consecutive sentence at this time myself. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Ray, you want to come in?
Yes, ma'am. I think we all always have to take into consideration the victims. I think that there's no difference here. I think that Mr. Wu made serious problems by committing this offense. And I know that the victims can never forget what happened. I am not convinced personally that Mr. Wu does not understand what happened. I believe that he understood at that time what he was doing, and that he understands today what he was doing. I know he's basically saying that he did not, but he had a blunt, stolen vehicle with his friends, and as the state indicated, the county attorney indicated, he left the state of Arizona, drove over to California after committing the offense, ended up in the trunk of the car, hiding. I think he understood what he had done. That being said, of course, I'm not in favor of paroling him to his next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. I'm going to go ahead and make a motion then based on our discussion today and input we've received from so many people. I'm going to move to deny Rule 31412B and to deny absolute discharge.
Second.
Agreed.
All right, motion by myself, seconded by Mr. Johnson, agreed by Dr. White, Mr. Neal, Mr. Quinones. And I'm also going to request a one-year set-off based on the date of the crime.
Agreed.
Okay, so release type 9412B, 411. And the reasons for denial, serious and violent offense, loss of human life, trauma to the victim, I'm going to say age of the victim, given that one of the victims was a baby, unborn baby, serious bodily injury, multiple victims. I'm going to say victim harassment, given that the gun was waved and shown to, and then possibly the gestures at the trial, if that was true. Violated previous probation and parole. Prior criminal history, because he had done similar incidents with motor vehicles, theft, car theft. I'll say recent discipline, although it's 2015, he does say he quit smoking, but next time we hear him, maybe we won't check that one, but maybe we will. And I'll say, just because there's no one here today, no support, no family community support system, does anyone else think of anything else to add on that one? Okay, thank you. Mr. Vaux?
Yes,
ma'am. You heard the board's discussion. The board has voted unanimously to deny your parole to consecutive sentence, sir. And we also request a one-year set-off, which means in approximately a year, you'll be recertified to come before the board again. Next time it'll be a little easier. You may know what to expect more. So you can think about, you know, over the year, you can think about this and prepare yourself a little bit better. Your family, your support are welcome to attend. They can attend by phone or they can come here in person. That's fine. But we will talk to you again in approximately a year, sir. Do you have any questions? Did you hear the reasons for denial?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Do you have any questions for us?
No, ma'am. Thank you for your time.
All right. And thank you for being so so polite and respectful during the hearing, sir. But your hearing is concluded. If you'd give the phone back to the CO3, we'd appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.